Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Please take your seats quickly, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Tennis Weekly with Joel and Kim, sponsored by DownloadTennis.com. On today's tour catch-up,
Krejcikova conquers Świątek in Ostrava,
Djokovic captures title number 90 in Astana,
and Taylor Fritz cracks the top 10 for the first time.
Kim, Chris, today is the 11th of October and we are here to catch up on the week in tennis at Tennis Weekly HQ. We have had another fascinating week or so on the ATP and WTA tours in Ostrava, Astana, Tokyo and Monastir in Tunisia. Lots to talk about. Iga Świątek finally falling to Barbora Krejcikova in a final. Krejcikova with back-to-back titles, as well as Novak Djokovic, who captured his 90th singles title in Astana. Taylor Fritz cracking the top 10 as well. But of course, the biggest news of all is Kim is back on the show.
Woo! Cue mucho celebration.
Back and 100% healthy and back from your trip from Mallorca, where I feel like it was too much of a convenience for you to be out there, or a coincidence even, for you to be out there and baby Rafa coming into the world.
I know, I was able to, you know, give my nice little birthing gift to the Nadal. That sounds a bit wrong, but no, it was very coincidental that I went to Mallorca and about a few hours after I arrived, the baby was born.
Oh, wow. Were they waiting for you?
Were you the doula? Did you deliver the baby?
That's my secret role, yeah, to deliver baby Rafa. But no, yeah, I'm back. I'm so sorry I missed the big 300 last week. But thank you for doing it justice.
Postponing the punishment.
For postponing.
I would say. Yes. Apart from the court later. The celebration, yes. We're celebrating.
I had quite a few sangrias to celebrate baby Rafa being born when I was in Mallorca on the weekend. So yeah, all good news.
I'm just envisaging there were like bells on the street. Everyone was out kind of celebrating. Was it like that? Or is that just a complete kind of picture of imagination in my head?
It definitely your imagination. I think most people are just going about their business.
Oh, okay,
although he is a loved son of Mallorca. They're very sort of humble about it all, so there's no kind of, you know, dramatic scenes really.
No national day,
very, very private. Well, there should be really a national day of a holiday
celebration
for... Well,
yeah.
I mean, there was no holiday for him, was there? Because all of a sudden he was back on the court, the Rafael Nadal Open Academy, playing. I feel like literally like a day after his baby had been born. I mean, I love the dedication there, but there's got to be some questioning there on the parenting.
Well, I mean, that you don't get to being a 22-time Grand Slam champion for nothing. You've got to put the hours
he's,
in.
He's coming for that tour finals title, isn't he? That elusive tour finals title.
That is the last one remaining of the collection. So that museum isn't going to, yeah, fill its shelves itself, is it, out in Manacor? So, but I mean, that's been my highlight of the week, the birth of baby Rafa. What about you? I mean, you both have had good weeks, I trust, and I hope. Have you had any particular moments from the past week on tour that have grabbed you? Joel, what's your thoughts? What are you going to plump for?
I feel like Chris is instantly going to go on to the WTA tour and talk about Ostrava, which was a cracking event. But I'm actually staying in Kazakhstan, and I've got to talk about the semi-final between Novak Djokovic and Daniil Medvedev, which for me, I know we didn't get a conclusive, well, we did get a conclusive ending. We got a very bizarre ending, but the kind of the two sets that they played, which was split 4-6, 7-6, yeah, for me was such high quality tennis, like Grand Slam final, I felt like worthy tennis. And just to see them battle it out on the tennis court, it felt like they were, you know, for me, it was like they had something to prove. And regardless of this being, you know, a 500 event all the way out in Kazakhstan, they really wanted to bring it. You know, Djokovic making up for lost time. Medvedev as well, having a very kind of stop-start season, I feel, with, you know, kind of like a few weeks at world number one, quite a few lost finals, you know, not being able to play as much as he would have liked with, you know, Wimbledon, you know, banning Russians and Belarusians. So it was amazing to see the quality I felt that they kind of brought to the court. And then all of a sudden that kind of shock ending when Medvedev, you know, Djokovic played a great tiebreak. Medvedev maybe could have snatched it with we had a very routine volley at 5-all, but yeah, he just sort of called it in the end. I think he said his abductor was playing up and he couldn't play on, or, you know, he wanted to keep it risk free. So yeah, for me that was kind of the highlight in terms of, yeah, the quality, but also the kind of shock ending we got as well.
I suppose maybe he's thinking of the World Tour Finals as well with any potential injury. And I know it's not called the World Tour Finals, but you know what I mean. The end of season. But yeah, because he did look completely fine, didn't he? Except for those last sort of 8 points, and then it was all over in a flash, and on Djokovic went on his merry way into the final for a second title not long after.
It was funny because Djokovic like looked annoyed. He looked annoyed. He looked angry that, he was just sort of revving up, you know, having, you know, won that second set. And I think he honestly said afterwards that he felt Medvedev was playing the better tennis in set one and set two. So maybe, yeah, he was kind of fully pumped for, you know, going the honest way into a third. But he felt like maybe he was sort of robbed of that opportunity. And I think for me, that sort of, yeah, sort of annoyance that I think you saw on the TV, for me, it just sort of captured, I think, how much these tournaments mean to Djokovic at the moment, given, you know, the lack of time he's been able to spend, you know, on the tour due to his, you know, his vaccination status. And you know, he obviously came through relatively more comfortably in the final against Tsitsipas, but he was given a real stern examination, I think, by Medvedev. And yeah, it was impressive to see the level that they brought out in a tournament that, again, for me, it was like Grand Slam tennis on a 500 stage.
Yeah, it was a big match, wasn't it? I think in that one, he was probably just quite frustrated that he was finally having one of those contests that he's been missing on the tour, having been absent for a while, and he didn't get to sort of complete it. Like, he was doing the problem solving, he was winning the clutch points, and he was kind of really competing again at sort of the highest level, and some of the highest level tennis that I've seen this year. I mean, especially at a smaller tournament like a 500. But yeah, he definitely didn't seem like he wanted to kind of accept the retirement, which seemed very, very odd in that
situation.
Do you
sympathise with Medvedev for withdrawing?
Of course. I think you'd never want to do that. He said that he felt a strange pop in his abductor early in the tiebreak.
It didn't look like it when in that tiebreak, though, did it?
I mean, I've never had an abductor pop, but I wouldn't be able to play tennis like that. Was the only thing I would say.
When anything suddenly pops, it's just quite disconcerting, isn't it? But I mean, if I was Djokovic, I'd be like, oh, great, I get to not play another set and I'm into the final. I personally wouldn't moan about it. I mean, Chris, we're not forgetting your highlight of the week, but quickly, just on that final, obviously it was Djokovic against Tsitsipas, and it was sort of pretty par for the court, really. Par for the court, that's our game. Par for the course, I should say. 6-3, 6-4. Tsitsipas is now not a zero from 9 ATP 500 finals. So I know he's won some Master Series, but he obviously doesn't like a 500 event. And his Djokovic extends his kind of winning record and head-to-head over Tsitsipas. But yeah, I mean, good title for Novak, two on the trot now with Tel Aviv. So, and his 90th tour title overall. So big milestone. I don't know what you get for 90. What's the sort of, it's not golden, it's not platinum. Does anyone know what 90 merits in kind of anniversary terms?
Has anyone ever got there before? That would be the question.
Something gluten free for Novak, maybe.
Yeah, a gluten free. To celebrate. A gluten free 90.
I mean, just on Tsitsipas's record, you know, at 500s, in 500 finals, 0-9. I mean, why do you think that is the case? Because he seems to be doing all right, I feel like, at, you know, at the Masters level, at the 1000 level, but yeah, it's just not been able to kind of do it in smaller tournaments. You know, he's lost twice to Djokovic, twice to Nadal, Federer, Dominic Thiem, Rublev, Zverev, and for me, probably the most surprising one, Felix Auger-Aliassime in Rotterdam. I mean, we all know his record in finals is not particularly great. I mean, why do you feel like he's, you know, just not been at the races when it comes to finals days in these smaller tournaments?
Saving it for the bigger events, maybe? Or just...
I don't think he's getting it done in the bigger events either, though, is he, Kim? I think against Coric, he looked a bit out of sorts, I felt. And I don't know what it is particularly, but I think he previously probably had some expectation at some of those smaller tournaments. And maybe in some of the bigger ones early in his career, there wasn't as much expectation. And now it's kind of flipped and he isn't getting the results that he needs. And maybe he's a bit more stressed in those situations because he should be beating some of these players and winning some of these titles. Obviously, I don't think that about Djokovic, but I think against Coric in Canada, that was a match where he was completely outplayed and he did look a bit out of sorts at times. And I think there's something has changed in his mentality where he hasn't pushed on like some of the other players have. And he's kind of stayed in the middle and hasn't, I don't know, maybe it's ever since Paris. I really do think that when you are in that sort of winning situation and you aren't getting it done, it's always going to be in the back of your mind somewhere. But
he needs to speak to Andre Rublev. He needs to speak to Andre Rublev about ATP 500s.
King of the 500s. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, well, although he did beat Rublev in the semi-final this past week. Just one other player to touch upon in Astana. The return of Carlos Alcaraz, you know, world number one, US Open champion. You called this, Joel, I think, didn't you? I think you said that this had upset potential.
Oh, I think Joel said Carlos was going to win the title. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Well, I said the complete opposite, Kim.
Well, was it you, Chris?
I think I went upset alert. A lucky loser, sorry, David Goff, I'm playing world number one. I thought it could be on.
I do apologise, Chris. I'll buy you a drink sometime to make up for that faux pas.
He did lose in the next round, though.
Yeah, straight sets Carlos out to David Goffin. I mean, are you sort of surprised by that? We do often see that first match back, you know, it's a bit rusty. He said he was struggling with like the slowness of the courts and just, you know, Goffin was obviously had won a few matches and being Goffin, you know, on his day, he can play very, very well. So are you anyone worried about that at all? For Alcaraz fans?
I'd be a little bit concerned that, you know, a slow court was the problem there.
Lucky loser David Goffin as well. I mean, he lost to like a teenager I hadn't even heard of.
He lost to a 19-year-old, replaced a 19-year-old, the draw. Mm. It was Holger Rune that he replaced. And then he beat a 19-year-old in the form of the world number one. But it was the first match that he hadn't won a set in for 63 matches. So that's an amazing kind of feat, the fact that he's always been competitive. So I guess you have to slightly read into it that it was always going to happen, but it is a bit out of the ordinary for him.
I'd just say it's more of a blip more than anything. I think even though he's a, you know, young guy with lots of energy, he's played a lot of tennis this year, and you know, it just shows, I think, that, you know, the rigors of the game, and you know, it's come obviously an unfortunate you know, moment, you know, coming in as world number one, you want to kind of show your authority and that you belong at the top of the tree. But, you know, it does bring a different sort of pressure, and this will be a new, you know, experience for Alcaraz. You know, Medvedev has had a few weeks at number one as well. And similarly, I don't feel played particularly well. And, you know, I think just getting used to just being up there is going to take a little bit of time, and perhaps it was weighing on his shoulder going in, you know, his first tournament back on the ATP tour since, you know, winning the US Open. Yeah, maybe in a bit of pressure on him. But, you know, David Goffin is not an opponent you want to face, I feel, in your first round. Very experienced. He did play fantastically. I mean, it surprised me a little bit, but it really did kind of give me like a throwback of David Goffin from you know, a few years ago.
I think it surprised him as well. David Goffin's been quite surprised by the way that he played, and so did Carlos. I mean, he has got a win under his belt already, from the Davis Cup. So there's, it's not like it's been a straight to a loss there. He has had a win and a loss at the Davis Cup, and I guess it's about, after, you know, a big win like that, it takes a bit of time to readjust the tour. Rybakina had the same thing, and it is quite regular for this sort of thing. So not too concerned just yet, but it's gearing up for a pretty fascinating open end of season championships.
It is, it is. And Chris, you know, let's sort of, before we move on to other tournaments that have happened in the past week, I know you've had a few moments that you've enjoyed from the tour. Mm. What's shone out, you know, out of, I know, and we know you're going to say something on the WTA side. So what floated your boat particularly in the last week?
I have gone very niche WTA this week. Whilst Joel might go for the predictable answer in the form of Medvedev Djokovic, I've actually gone for a particular game of the Kvitova Badosa round of 16 in Ostrava, which was at 7-6, 4-3 to Kvitova. Kvitova on serve. I recommend everybody look up this clip. It had two of the best backhands I've ever seen on the WTA Tour from Paula Badosa, and they were down the line on the run, on the stretch. Both of them were challenged. Both of them were on the line. Kvitova then was painting lines herself, and then she finished it with an ace, and every single point was won with a winner. And I could watch that game on repeat. I thought it was fantastic, and I recommend anyone to have a little look at the highlights from that match, because I thought that was some exceptional tennis, and always good to see Kvitova playing well in her home country, even if she did get Rybakina'd in the next round. But I would say that was my highlight of the week, just watching some exceptional clean hitting.
How was your highlight not the final, Iga Świątek, Barbora Krejcikova, which for me was, I would say,
the obvious answer, Joel. The
one of the matches of the season.
I think it was probably the match of the season, yes. Mm. Another highlight, but I had to start with the real highlight, which was 4-3 in the second set of Kvitova Badosa. But no, that as you say, that final was pretty epic.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just shocked that the Iga Świątek has lost a final. This is the first final she's lost since, well, forever, because she's just been so dominant, and we don't expect her to get, you know, a runners-up trophy. But Barbora Krejcikova, yeah, absolute credit to her. After about 3 hours and 15 minutes, she found a way to, get a home title and beat Iga Świątek, the world number one. So obviously Iga did her utmost. She you know, saved quite a few championship points before
Krejcikova
got there. But I think, and nice to see Krejcikova getting some form again, because she's sort of been in the wilderness a bit. I know she had a lot of injury at the start of the year, but I think really, really nice for her to kind of get this title and do it in this manner as well, beating Świątek.
Great for the WTA Tour. You have to feel that in a season where Iga's run away with everything, and it's almost Iga versus the rest of the field. Mm. It's actually great to watch her challenged. And I think she genuinely, I mean, there were some tears after it, but I think she genuinely enjoyed the challenge, and she said that she did. And people have talked about this as potentially being a very good rivalry moving forward. For me, what was most enjoyable about the match was that Krejcikova kind of got her head back in the game. I think that's one thing that really impressed me about her French Open run, was that she was able to keep a level head whatever situation she was in. And she did it a couple of times against Rybakina. She was very close to going out. She went down the first set against Iga, and she just kept such a level head, kept playing, kept testing her, and kept believing in herself. And I think it was fantastic to see, you know, that a slam champ is back up on the rise, and not just on the doubles court. After we did dedicate last year's Path of the Courts to doubles and singles specialist, Joel, didn't we?
I know. Well, I was thinking, actually, you know, her prowess on the doubles court, I certainly think helps her, you know, on the singles court. And I think her beating Świątek, to me, just shows that, what, you know, just how complete of a game I think you need, you know, when you step on a court with someone like Świątek. And I think Krejcikova has great movement, and I really think that helps, you know, on a fast indoor court, you know, like it was in Ostrava. And I just think, yeah, having all those tools available to you. You're going to need absolutely everything at your disposal, I think, to defeat Świątek. And Krejcikova, I think, has showed over the last couple of weeks that, you know, she's back to that kind of ability. I think, you know, it was unfortunate, I think, that, yeah, as you said, Kim, that her injuries sort of derailed, you know, her earlier in the season, particularly on the clay, when I feel like that's one of her, you know, her strongest surface. So it's almost a little bit of a surprise to see her do so well towards the back end of the season on these indoor hard courts. But yeah, it's great to see. And, you know, she has got an outside chance of potentially being at the, you know, the end of season finals, you know, later on at the end of the season. But yeah, just playing some fantastic tennis at the moment. And, you know, I think riding on that, you know, that wave of momentum from Tallinn certainly helped. I know she's a bit, I think she's already kind of pulled out of playing in, I think she was meant to play in Cluj. I think, was it Cluj in Romania this week?
Yeah, it was indeed. Yeah, yeah. She was going to be playing there. And obviously she said that she played a lot of tennis and had a bit of wrist issues. Mm. But I think that's such a great point on, she was playing with real tenacity. Some of this, when she was pulled out wide, some of the forehand slices, it was almost Monica Niculescu-esque in terms of how difficult they were to retrieve. And she was moving, I mean, as well as I've seen her move. And that's a great point. It was very sad watching her go out in the first round of the French Open defending it, when you kind of felt like the only reason why she came back.
I mean, there was so many tears, you know, there was tears there. It, you know, it just was an awful, just
a nightmare.
She
came back too soon. Yeah. That's the only thing you could really think about, is that she really wanted to try and defend, even though she knew she couldn't defend. But she's got it going again. And there was a nice thing in the final that Iga donated her prize money. So it was kind of just a good vibe all round, that one, because it had a great atmosphere with being so close to the Polish border. It actually felt like it was more Iga's home tournament. But yeah, that was a real fan crowd favourite and great for the tour.
Yeah, I think Iga said that her prize money is going towards mental health charities in Poland. And, you know, she almost won the title. She was a couple of points away herself. So it was a fantastic match. Really good end to a good week of tennis in Ostrava, with 3 exclamation marks. And it's not just Ostrava, it's Ostrava.
Ostrava.
I mean, elsewhere on the WTA Tour, we had the very prettily named Jasmine Open out in Monastir, which out in Tunisia, so on Jabor's, you know, home event. But yeah, it wasn't to be for her, because Elise Mertens won this title, absolutely thrashed Elise Cornet in the final. First title of the year, I think, for Elise Mertens. She's had a bit of a so-so year and, you know, hasn't really been performing, shall we say, although she's normally a very consistent player. But yeah, 6-2, 6-love, dismantled Cornet. What did you make of Mertens' week out in Tunisia?
Well, you know, I was watching, Kim. I was watching.
I was surprised how one-sided that final was, because I was looking in the build-up and the preview there, head-to-head, it was very, very even, very, very 50-50. So yeah, for me to watch the highlights and see that scoreline, I was pretty surprised by it.
It was quite an odd one. In the statistics for that match, I think there was just a seven more unforced errors from Elise Cornet, and that was the real difference in that match. There was a few really key double faults at inopportune moments, and then it just kind of ran away from her, where she never really got the form going again. But when Mertens is on, the consistency,
she can get to the fourth round of a Grand Slam. Yes, we know that, Chris.
Yes,
like 25 times in a row.
Yes, yes, she can. Well, the third round it was.
Sorry, yeah, third round. But what was interesting, I mean, this tournament, you know, she, you know, Mertens did have her, you know, her down moments. You know, her serve wasn't, I feel like, particularly strong. It wasn't rock solid, I would say, kind of throughout. You know, she dropped sets. You know, she was broken. It felt quite easily in the build up. So I felt like there were still vulnerabilities there that you know, Cornet could have targeted. And Kim, as you said, kind of, for Mertens, hasn't had the, you know, the most, I wouldn't say, dare I say, the most consistent of years. So it was not, yeah, nice to see her, you know, get a title. But I think a lot of people were saying, wow, you know, the tennis in Ostrava, yeah, certainly that was something. And again, Grand Slam quality. But yeah, I don't know, Mertens Cornet in this final didn't feel like it sort of lived up to the spectacle of you know what was going down in Ostrava.
Yeah, I was expecting a bit more from Cornet given her her form this year, actually. But yeah, Merton's on it in the final. I have to say, though, I did find it funny going over to the double side of things. Kristina Mladenovic, she won that with Katerina Siniakova, attempted a little bit of Tunisian Arabic with her victory speech. And we know how many languages she likes to speak. So is this a new addition to her repertoire of, what are we at now, 28 languages?
Muguruza will be impressed, right?
Super impressed. I don't think it went down too well, though. I'm not sure people quite understood what she meant, but...
She gave it a go. I'd be useless. I'd be useless. What language would you want if you were in that situation?
If I had to say something,
Kim, I feel like you're going to say
Danish, Chris. No, you're based.
Yeah.
Kim, I feel like you could pass off a ceremony in Spanish, couldn't you?
I could probably just about. I mean, when they ask,
you could thank Rafa.
When they ask, yeah, players, well, Spanish players, you know how they've played. They sort of tend to say the same sort of things. So, I've got better at understanding the Spanish tennis kind of vocabulary, or however you say. But yeah, I mean, I admire anyone who is a multilingualist. So they always put us to shame, don't they, tennis players, with their. They're well-versed talking dictionaries. I mean, two players who, well, I mean, they might speak other languages. I'm not 100% sure, but two players out in the final in Tokyo, going back to the men's side of things, two English-speaking players, Taylor Fritz and Frances Tiafoe, headlining that one with the final. Fritz beating Tiafoe in two tiebreak sets to get his third title of the year.
Tiafoe losing tiebreaks.
Tiafoe was on a 13 tiebreak win streak.
What a claim. Yeah.
So 13 unlucky though, 13 and no more. But yeah, true, Taylor Fritz winning that title into the top 10 for the first time, which makes him the first American in the top 10 since, can anyone tell me who was the last American to break the top 10?
I actually do not know.
I was going to say Andy Roddick in my head, but that's wrong. There have been two, I think.
Well, you always think about Andy Roddick.
We been at least that. A few since then, yeah.
I don't know.
Is it Isner?
Is it John Isner?
Isner? Oh, no, break into for the first time, so it wouldn't be Isner.
John Isner was in 2012. He made his top 10 debut. But we had Jack Sock more recently in 2017. Okay. So goodness. Taylor Fritz has joined that elite level of American players.
I don't feel like he would want to be, given where Jack Sock went from to, wouldn't want to necessarily be, I don't feel like connected to that stuff.
I don't know. Jack Sock has the most match wins at the Laver Cup of anyone. That is very true.
He does bring it out for Laver Cup.
He sent Federer packing. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, but the thing about this one, I could not believe the story here that Taylor Fritz had been in hard quarantine in Korea until the morning of his tournament. And he got a flight, I think something like 6 a.m. From Korea to Tokyo to play the match. Just about managed to get through his first couple of rounds. And then it seemed like he was back in business. But that last week, he was bench pressing his girlfriend in the hotel room as part of his strength training.
I mean, absolutely. I mean, that's part of the tennis player's rule book, right?
Maybe he'd incorporate that into his routine. But I mean, it's an unbelievable story going from hard quarantine to his third title of the year and kind of breaking into the world's top eight. I'm slightly disappointed that he did win it because he was due to play in Stockholm. And I think maybe after the hard quarantine, I'm due to be going to that tournament and Taylor Fritz no longer will be.
I know he's pulled out. But you do have, because Tsitsipas has taken a wild card. So
he has indeed. He has indeed. We all have a top tenner there.
I think Fritz took literally the last round one slot on the Wednesday to play his match against Duckworth. And he only just... came through. It was a bit of a wobble, in that kind of that second set, and maybe got a bit lucky with Nick Kyrgios, conceding in the quarterfinals, didn't take to the court, so went through on a walkover. He had a very good run. He's had a very good season, I think. You know, I would feel like we kind of think about him in terms of his losses. I would, particularly at Wimbledon, but you know, to Rafa. But you know, he's had a great season, and I think only Novak Djokovic aside, I think he's the only other player to have won a 250, a 500, and a 1,000 title this season. So yeah, he's doing very well on the circuit, and Francis Tiafoe as well has been. You know, I feel like he's, you know, he's very much kind of kicked on, you know, semi-finals at the US Open. For me, he's another player who, again, do you feel like he can break the top 10 as an American? I feel like we're just talking about Americans and, you know, how there's a lot of depth there at the moment with these two. Brooksby, Isner still knocking around. I know Riley Opelka's not on great form at the moment, but there's quite a few in the, you know, the top 50 and the top 100. Does it feel like these two are kind of your, are a little bit apart from everyone else at the moment, or?
Yeah, I think, I mean, they are the highest ranked at present, especially, yeah, I mean, Taylor Fritz and probably the most consistent over the year, but obviously got Korda and Nakashima to throw in there as well. They do have such
Don't
great
forget
depth
Nakashima
at the moment. Exactly. I mean, I'd love to see Francis Tiafoe crack the top 10. He's up to 17, so we could have a London bus situation. Two Americans going in within the space of, you know, however long.
There's been such a dearth, hasn't there, for a while. I mean, the fact that Jack Sock was the last American man to make their top 10 debut, and we're talking way back in November 2017, you know, for a nation of America's stature, it still feels like that's, you know, 5 years, it still feels like that's too long for, you know, the next American to, you know, to come along.
It does feel like it's been a while. And I remember there was that question that Murray got asked at Wimbledon about how long it's been since there's been a men's semi-finalist from the US. And he was like, obviously, Serena Williams, obviously, is the person. And there was that big question. Mm. Sam Querrey was the last one in the semi-final, I think, at that time. And there really has just been that lack of presence at the top tier of tennis, especially at the Grand Slams. So I think it's great that they're both playing well. I think I love watching Taylor Fritz play. I think it's such a fluid game. And with Francis, he's obviously... Oh, it's so natural. Mm. And it's such a great shot off the ground. And I think with Francis, he always reminds me a little bit of Dan Evans in that mentality where sometimes he's really there, sometimes he drifts away. And part of the reason I think he gets into so many tie breaks is because he doesn't necessarily maintain concentration throughout the entirety of a set. But again, I think it's great that he's able to back it up, because it could have been quite different where he might not have been spurred on. But instead, he produced some really good tennis and gave himself a good shot at taking one of those sets.
I mean, is it just on that? It's quite interesting you talk about, you know, the number of tie breaks that you know Tiafoe has won this season. Yes, he lost these two. I mean, how do you interpret that? Do you interpret that like he needs to do more to try and break his opponent's serve and really kind of go and attack it, or do you think he can, you know, be content in like, you know, I'll try and get it to, you know, six all, and then, you know, I'm going to really focus on the tiebreak and you know, take that sort of approach. How do you see that kind of, you know, tiebreak section? Is it a good record to have, or do you feel like he should be able to kind of, you know, with his ability, he should be trying to, you know, make these sets, you know, less complicated than sometimes they can be?
Well, think about the classic players that we know to get into tiebreaks on the regular. It's the very tall, it's the very good servers who serve a really high number of aces, and that's the traditional nature would be that it's unable to break them. And I think it's a case where with Tiafoe, you don't want to be in as many tiebreaks as he is in. I think you want to be able to get the damage done, and you want to be able to make your mark a bit more. And I think you will always have chances. I think even in the match that I was watching in the final, there were quite a lot of break points here to save. And so I think it's an unusual statistic, an unusual situation for someone with his game to be in. But I do think when he pushes on, he will hopefully kind of get it done quicker and be able to maintain his focus, because otherwise you will give players who are ranked below you opportunities, and he has had a tendency to do that in the past.
Yeah, he's certainly for me a player who, you know, loves the big court, loves all the, you know, the entertainment and the buzz. But yeah, there are sometimes for me there's that lack of consistency that I feel like a Taylor Fritz has showed more of, and that has enabled him into the, you know, into the top 10. I mean, one other player before we go to a break, you guys, Casper Ruud, Casper Ruud, Carlos Alcaraz lost, his first tournament back post US Open on the ATP Tour. Casper Ruud also did the same. And Kim, he lost to Jaume Munar, 6-3 in Tokyo, straight sets. I mean, I was not expecting this to happen, but a little bit of a hangover for both of the US Open men's finalists.
I think Jaume Munar, doing it for Mallorca with that one. Also knew I was going for the weekend.
He wanted Rafa back up to world number two.
Exactly. There's always a bit of a hangover there, isn't there, after slams? And we've seen it so many times before. So that also doesn't surprise me, to be fair. And I do think Jaume Munar on his day is, not too shabby. But on that note, let's take a quick break now, but we'll be back in the second half to talk a lot more about the Billie Jean King Cup finals and all the squad announcements, a special Par for the Courts where I'm, I think, facing off against Joel, and also looking ahead to all the action this week, including San Diego. So do not go anywhere.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Welcome back to Tennis Weekly with Joel and Kim and Chris, sponsored by downloadtennis.com. And now we're going to move on to a very special edition of Par for the Courts, which, Chris, I think you are hosting
because
and Joel are going to have a bit of a battle this evening.
I thought, what better way, Kim, to celebrate the fact that you guys have got to 300 episodes than putting you to the test with a 300-themed Par for the Courts?
Ooh.
It is a challenge.
I've been looking forward to this for the last week or so.
I think it's built up the anticipation.
It has built up the anticipation, but it's also built up the jeopardy as well, I think.
Yes. And have you been Googling the number 300 when it comes to tennis?
Anybody? That would have been a great shout.
Please be honest, have you?
No,
We'll find out. We'll find out if Joel performs particularly well. So the way that this will work, we have two Par for the Courts, and it will be up to you guys to decide how many of the answers you think you can get to set par, and then the other person will decide if they think they can beat you. Ooh. Or they're going to call your bluff, and you have to put your money where your mouth is and list the answers. So we will have Kim can set par for the first one.
Okay. Happy with
and
that?
The first... Yeah. Are you okay with that, Joel?
Go for it.
And the first question is, players who have over 300 Grand Slam match wins, and it's men's and women's.
Oh!
I can tell you there are five answers that I'm looking for. What would you like to set par, Kim?
So 300 Grand Slam match wins, just to clarify.
Current players.
Current players or retired?
It is of all time.
Of all time, okay. And in the singles, okay.
That is correct. Across the men's and women's.
Oh, okay, I'm going to say I could get three. Is that too low? Three or five, I think.
Three or five, three? Joel.
Okay.
You've got to play it, Joel, haven't you?
Oh, I don't know. Oh. No, Kim, I'm not convinced. I've got four. I'm not convinced. I've got four answers, but I'm not convinced they're all correct. So I'm gonna call you out, Kim.
Bring it home, Kim. I want to hear you do this.
Oh God. Okay. And it's men and women, right?
Correct.
Okay. Oh, I've just had a thought. I was thinking of just people who've played loads of slams, not necessarily winning matches. Okay. Oh, well, okay. I'll go for the obvious ones, maybe. Roger Federer?
That is correct answer.
Whew. Rafael Nadal?
Another correct answer.
Oh, maybe I should have gone for more than three. Novak Djokovic?
Another correct answer. Oh. Would you like to keep going?
And this is ever in the Open era.
Yes.
Serena Williams?
That's another correct answer.
Oh, I definitely could have got all of these.
I could have gone for more.
I'm crying into a pillow tonight. This is shocking from me.
Who else?
So there's one other player.
So I can...
Steffi Graf?
There is one other player. I can tell you it's not Steffi Graf.
Martina Navratilova?
It's Martina Navratilova.
Oh, I could have got all five there. I definitely could have got all five.
Yes, that's Roger Federer with 369. Serena Williams with 358. Then it's 334 for Novak Djokovic. Rafael Nadal, 312. Martina Navratilova with 306. And then Chrissy Evert had 299, just one win away from exclusive 300 club, which you are both a part of, Joel and Kim, having made it to 300. Match wins on the podcast court.
So Kim is 1-0 up.
That is 1-0 up. I think, John, you've got to be a bit braver.
I've got
to
be braver, I know. I've got to go braver.
So are you ready for the second part of the course of this week?
Let's do it.
And this is players who have spent over 300 weeks as world number one.
Male or female?
It is across both. And there may be some crossover.
And how many answers are there total?
There are five.
Oh, another five. Okay.
Okay, I'm gonna have to go. I feel I'm gonna have to go broke here. I'm gonna say. I'm gonna go four.
I'm not sure Kim's gonna say five.
Or
is she?
That would be a big call.
So 300 or more weeks at world number one.
And you are allowed to have crossover with the previous question.
I will say five. Sod it.
Oh, here we go. Take control of your destiny, Kim.
Right, Roger Federer.
That is the correct answer.
Novak Djokovic.
Yes.
Serena Williams.
Yes.
I don't think Rafa's actually made 300 weeks at number one, has he? Or maybe he has. But I think I need to go Pete Sampras.
I'm afraid that's an incorrect answer.
Oh, no.
Oh, Kim, you were too brave. Joel there. Wins. That was
slightly too brave.
Joel,
are there any that you would have got?
I would have gained Jimmy Connors, John McEnroe.
Well, I can tell you that it was only two male players, and you were completely right. Rafa is not one of them. It was just Roger Federer and Novak Djokovic at 312 weeks of Federer and 373 for Djokovic. And then the female players were Steffi Graf, 377 weeks in a relatively short career compared to the other two in the category, which are Serena and Navratilova with 319 and 332. So it is one all. This is not necessarily too fair on Kim, but the tiebreak question relates to the first episode. cast your mind back 300 episodes, well, 301 episodes now.
Wasn't the first episode Joel on a park bench or something?
No, that
was... like that from audio quality. Yeah. but in that episode that I listened to, Joel was reporting on the events of the 2018 Estoril Open. Joel, for the win, I will let you have this for the win if you can get this.
Okay.
Which all-British doubles partnership took home the title that week?
Ooh, that's a great question.
Wow.
Do you know what? I think I've got it. Maybe not. Is it?
For glory, Joel.
Colin Fleming and Ross Hutchins.
Ooh, that's a blast from the past.
That would be a very good guess. I have to say, very surprisingly, it was Carl Edmund and Cam Norrie who won the title in a first-time partnership, taking out Wesley Kolhoff and Artem Sitak, 6462. And I just thought that was a very unusual thing from the first episode.
Wow.
That it was a doubles title for Cam Norrie.
To be honest, I'm surprised you got that far in that episode because...
They were shorter then, Joel. They were shorter. But a draw. Well done, both. If you'd like to know, in the 2018 Estoril Open, it was actually Francis Tiafoe who lost in that final Joao Sousa. So a big theme on this week.
And Joao Sousa has just lost very easily to Dominic Thiem, I think.
We've come full circle. That is correct. We've come full circle.
Wow. He's still active.
Wow.
Still active. A draw. Court, eh?
I mean, it's so British. A draw, Kim. We're going to have to...
We could rock, paper, scissors for after.
We've got to come back. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But moving on, we do have a mailbag for our 301st episode. And this is from Paula on email. Paula wrote in to us and said this. With a beetle found in Western Serbia named the Duvalius Djokovici after Novak Djokovic, if you could name an insect after a player, what would it be?
Ooh, this is great.
This is like pun central, I feel.
Goodness.
Novak Djokovic has an insect named after him in Western Serbia. This is the whole...
it's a cockroach, isn't it, I think?
Is that a compliment or a...
I believe it's a beetle. I'm not sure the beetle is a type of cockroach before you... That might cause some controversy there, Joel. What would I name after a certain player? What about a Muguruza or a Murray Moth? That might be quite nice.
Rafael Nadal?
Oh, it had to be Kim. It had to be.
Or Bethany Matic Sands?
That's a very good one.
Marie Buzkova. I feel like that's been done before.
Barbara Krejčíková.
Oh, that's good. That's the winner. That's the winner. I'm trying to think of my brain has gone. No, I've got nothing.
It's still in Estoril 2018.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's pretty cool though that Djokovic has an insect named after him. Maybe he'll start getting moons and stars named after him next. That seems
this
to be
is a gateway naming, isn't it, Kim?
A type of rose, you know, they're always named after famous people.
it's a lovely colour orange, though, the beetle, I have to say, for the visual, if you haven't got it. It's quite an impressive looking, bug.
Duvalius Djokovici, that could certainly, remember that, it might feature in a quiz later this year. Hint, hint. But let's move on. We've got some other news from the past week. Billie Jean King Cup squads have been announced. We've got about a month till that kicks off. We've got Group A, B, C and D. Lots of different players involved. I mean, looking at it, Group D is probably looking like the tough one because you've got the Czech Republic and the USA, both of which have the strongest teams on paper. You may care to disagree, but yeah, what are you thinking when you're looking at the lineups for the Fed Cup?
I'm thinking how many of these players are going to drop out, if I'm being quite honest. Well, I remember these being announced last year, and they're not necessarily being, you know, what you got, I feel like, on event day. I thought it was interesting to hear, USA have got Jessie Pegula and Coco Gauff in the squad at the moment. I think Pegula is now qualified for the end of season finals in the singles. And she, I think, has said that she would aim to play both of them, unlike Iga Świątek, who's just said, you know, logistically, continent to continent is just too much for me. It's interesting that other players have actually said, I'm going to try and do both. I think it's maybe easier for players like Gauff and Pegula, where maybe other players can do more of the kind of the singles matches, and maybe they can come in for the, you know, the odd doubles, and you know, they enjoy the team spirit, and maybe Iga Świątek feels a, you know, bigger weight on her shoulders in terms of, you know, she'll feel like she has to play absolutely everything. But for me, that USA team is very strong, but interesting to see some of those players are still prioritizing Billie Jean King Cup, regardless of, you know, where their, you know, their singles ranking might take them in terms of the end of season finals.
Yeah, and Madison Keys and Danielle Collins have always made it super clear. If they get asked, they're going to play. And if they're fit, they're going to play. So I think it's great that they're on the team. Last year, Danielle Collins was playing as the number one player. And she's had, since then, she's reached a Grand Slam final, had a career high ranking. And she's almost, is she fourth on the list in terms of ranking at the moment? So that just shows the depth and strength of the US team going into that, because they had a good run to the semifinals last year. It's great to see Taylor Townsend back in the favour of the USTA. I think she's more than deserved her spot with some great results, reaching the final of and the semi-final of Grand Slams and doubles this year. I think you're completely right, Joel. If Iga was there, she'd be playing singles and doubles in every tie. And that obviously is something that does not set her up for the perfect end of season championships. And she's probably learned from the Kujica, for example, from last year, that it just kind of was a step too far for the body. I think the Czechs obviously look like they're also in Group D. Vondrousova played fantastically last time. They've got some real great depth there with Pliskova as well. They'll be tough to beat. In fact, that would be a great match to be at. You feel like there's a few teams like the Belgians, the Slovakias, the Australias, which
Great
haven't
Britain.
Quite... Great Britain? I think we've got some good strength. I think if Anne Kiovathong's playing for us, you know, maybe she'll be able to get one.
I mean, Harriet Dart is in good form, if you're on the tour at the moment. Emma Raducanu is on the initial squad. I'm still very sceptical whether we're actually going to see her on court and whether she's being used for in marketing and just kind of ticket sales. But Raducanu, Dart, Bolter, Watson. Not as many players as some of the other squads, but yeah, I think Dart for me is like the most informed player we have at the moment, and I feel like our chances really do rest on if Raducanu is going to be kind of fit and firing for this.
I mean, should we mention with regards to Emma the recent news that apparently she's parted ways with Dmitry Tursunov? Mm. I mean, what do we all make of that? We were all hoping this wouldn't happen. They've been together a couple of months now, yet another coach has gone. I mean, this is sort of what are your initial thoughts on that one? Because doesn't look good, does it? It keeps happening.
I mean, I think this one is a bit different from the previous one, because I think as is being reported, is that the 19-year-old Raducanu was wishing to continue working with him. But kind of Tursunov, actually, it seems like he's lined up someone else to work with. So that is something that is quite unusual from the Emma story. Obviously, people would have, just after the US Open, be lining up to try and coach her, because that would have been such a coveted gig, you know, probably one of the most exciting prospects for tennis. So it's very unusual for Tursunov to leave. It clearly wasn't something that he thought that was going to work in the long term as a partnership. He's very matter of fact and frank with how he deals with people. So I'm sure we will hear more about this. The positive side of it is that she is now working with Andy Murray's sort of former sort of physical trainer, Jez Green, which has been super important to her in terms of getting back into fitness, because that's something that we have seen her body sort of falling apart at times throughout the year. And under sort of Jez Green helping with the physical side of things, he picked up one of his Wimbledon titles, a US Open title, and Olympic gold medal. So when it comes to conditioning, he is... one of the absolute best that you can work with. But I mean, it's very shocking. You know, we felt like she was on the up again. And for a tennis coach to walk away from one of the sports most exciting, I mean, I can't believe it, really.
Do you think that damages her, her reputation in terms of, you know, coaches who are going to want to work with her? Because again, as you said, it's not the way round, I feel like you would expect based on the reports that we're hearing. And we don't know whether, you know, where Tursunov is going to end up. We understand he is going to be hooking up with another player, but we don't know who that is at the moment. But yeah, for Emma, it's like back to the drawing board for what it feels like the tenth time now. It doesn't feel like a great image or presentation she's got going if the coach has now, you know, been like, actually, sod this, you know, I'm off to coach someone else.
Yeah, if you were a coach, I'm not sure that you would particularly want to take on this sort of role right now with Emma. I think it would be one which wouldn't necessarily be a great thing for your career, given how short some of the stints she has had with coaches and how it is very much a trial basis where a lot of people don't make it past the trial and then someone's just left the position. But I think it'd be interesting to see that if her fitness is up and she's able to compete on a more regular basis with her sort of her father in her corner and she's got a very good tennis head, she can do very well without a coach. And she's kind of talked about that as something that she thinks is a strength of hers, is that she's able to do well with that. But I think I'd be calling up the coach that took me to the US Open title if I were her at this stage.
I feel like Kim's saying the same thing.
Yeah, well, quite. I mean, should never have got rid of him. yeah, it's a shame that Terstrom hasn't worked out. And I do hope that there can be a forged, a longer term partnership. But it's obviously, you know, we're not in the inside of the Emma camp, so they all have their reasons. But I keep feeling like we're saying, oh, we'll have to see about this, see how it goes. But it's just quite frustrating, isn't it? I think British tennis fans are thinking, what on earth? But hopefully she'll be at the Billie Jean King Cup, especially, you know, at home. So,
well, Anne Kiovathon could do some coaching. Maybe that's what she needs.
Yeah.
Maybe. I've always said that could be a good pick for her.
Yeah. Yeah. Why not? I mean, let's look ahead to next week on tour. This week, I should say, as we are recording slightly later than usual on a Tuesday. Got a host of tournaments this week. We've got Florence, Gijón, San Diego, Cluj. I have lots going on, especially San Diego, I'd imagine. We've got a lot of top names there. The final kind of lineup for the WTA finals is, you know, still yet to be decided. We've only got two players qualified already. I think Pegula actually, so making it three. Who are your eyes on this week? Where are you looking? What are you most looking forward to for this week on tour?
Yeah, I think San Diego is probably the place to be. I feel like these 500 events are almost like more intriguing and exciting than like some of the 1,000 events that we have, given the quality and, as you said, like the kind of the race really to Fort Worth, which sounds really bizarre, I think, just saying it out loud. But, you know, it's the state we're in, given, you know, the WTA's kind of standoff with China. And, yeah, it'll be interesting to see who, you know, makes their play this week, because they're all, you know, all the players looking to qualify are there or thereabouts. And it's so very tightly compacted. Coco Gauff, Caroline Garcia, Sakkari, Kasatkina, Sabalenka, are all in San Diego. So for me, it's going to be very interesting to see who comes out on top there. And it almost feels like these ranking points are going to be very, very decisive when it comes to who ends up in that final eight, in the United States for the WTA finals.
Yeah, and there's a big curve. I've been looking at all the spreadsheets. There's a big curveball coming with a late 1,000 tournament in Guadalajara. Mm. And so I've been looking at the spreadsheet. I have to say, Kim, I'm a bit worried. I did look at the spreadsheet and saw that if Garcia goes out in the first round like she has done in San Diego, then she needs to put in a really good performance at Guadalajara in the coming weeks. So that is a cause for concern. I don't want to alarm you too much, but I am also, unsurprisingly, in San Diego, because Bianca has had that great win over Samsonova in the first round, which I don't think many people would have picked. Hopefully she's back in business. And I saw a tweet about the end of 2019, and people thought it would be the big three of WTA would be Osaka, Ash Barty, and Bianca Andreescu. And it's really, when you think about kind of Bianca still just kind of trying to pick up some match wins and get herself back to fitness, and the absent Osaka at the moment and retired Barty, you do just think it would be so great if one of them, one of the two remaining playing, could really get something going. So hopefully Bianca will have a good run. But I'll give a little nod to Florence. There's Felix is playing and so is Berrettini, and that will be an entertaining week, and it'd be great if we could get some Italian interest there. But I think it'd be a good addition to the tour with the absence of the Asian swing. I think there's one in Florence this week, and there's another in Italy next week as well. So little Italian swing could be quite fun.
Yeah, exactly. And it's all, you know, the end of season finals are obviously out there. So they have quite a lot at this time, don't they? Yeah, my highlight of the week was going to be to see what Caroline Garcia would do, but we've seen that already. So I think I'm scratching my head now.
I thought was it not going to be Jacqueline Christiane coming out in a cape in Cluj?
Well, let's hope so, because I know that really cheered you up, didn't it, last year, Joel, when that happened. So
I know this is highlight of the year.
I mean, unfortunately, she's already been defeated, so I
hope... She in the doubles?
Well, yeah, I don't know, but yeah, she's not in the...
She's out in both.
Oh.
She lost our very own Harriet Dart and Nicolescu.
The cape is cursed. Second reference. The cape is cursed. but good, couple good wins for Dominic Thiem and Andy Murray today over Davidovich Fokina, the sixth seed in Gijón. I'll be curious to see how they kind of get on. Andy Murray, yeah, I think he's got quite a nice little draw here that he could do some damage in. So another player to keep my eye on.
I've got a question for you guys. So Iga, we just talked about this. Iga was very quick and very early to pull out of the Billie Jean King Cup because she had to go from Europe to the US. So she's just done almost the exact same thing, going from Ostrava to San Diego to play in the tournament. And it makes you think that, is it something to do with the fact that there's the ranking points that are available? I mean, she's got an awful lot of ranking points, so I'm not sure why it would be. But it is a little bit odd that we're already seeing her make that journey after playing such a full week of tennis and such a long final at this stage of the tournament, of the year. That's a bit odd, isn't it?
I suppose so, but you know, because if you're already there qualified, you know, what's the need to play it perhaps, but maybe she's got a bit of FOMO.
Yeah. Or actually, to be honest, maybe she's just going to stay in North America.
Or she wants,
Guadalajara and then Fort Worth. It makes sense actually.
Bit of California sun.
It's definitely the scheduling of going back and then coming back again.
Back and forth is, I think, for me, the
That makes sense. Makes sense. She's going to have that for free. It's fine.
She defeated you.
Yeah.
No, good shout. But yeah, I think all eyes on San Diego. It's all to play for, really. It's very, very close with the final position. So that's going to be exciting. I think that brings us to a close for another week for episode 301, but a belated celebration for the big 300 from last week.
Yes, listeners, I hope you've enjoyed listening to episode 301 of the Tennis Weekly podcast. Remember to subscribe to us on whatever device you listen to us on to stay up to date on all the action to come on the ATP and WTA tours. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all major podcasting platforms out there. You can also listen to us on the DownloadTennis.com app. And if you like what you're hearing, then make sure to leave us a rating and comment on Apple Podcasts or Spotify.
And you can follow us on social media. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Tennis Weekly Pod. So do give us a like and a follow if you don't already. And let us know all your thoughts, feedback, comments, or any questions you may have for the mailbag as well. You can also email us on tennisweeklypod@gmail.com. And don't forget to check out our website, www.tennisweekly.co.uk.
And we will be back next time at Tennis Weekly HQ for our latest tour catch up. So I hope you can join us for that. But in the meantime, it's goodbye from Kim.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from Chris.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from me. We'll see you again soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.